attention, passengers of airline flight 517. Please go to the nearest ticket counter for updated information. This flight has been canceled. Please go to the nearest ticket counter for updated information.
Oh, boy. I get to fly today. Have you been on a flight lately? Unbelievable. Not sure if that was a security checkpoint I just went through or the line to ride Space Mountain at Disneyland.
This is a gate change announcement.
Hold it.
Gate 24 has changed.
Ah.
This has been a gate change announcement only.
Yeah, that's not my gate. All I gotta say is that at least today went smoother than my last trip through security a few weeks ago. I don't know, it just didn't occur to me that the book I was reading might raise some eyebrows. So when the screener pulled out of my backpack the latest book by Dr. Waleed Ferez entitled Future Jihad, Terrorist Strategies Against America, well, things kind of slowed down there in the security line. Three different screeners looked the book over very carefully, rifling through the pages in search of weapons of mass destruction, I guess. I wanted to say, you know, that title does make it sound more like a how-to manual instead of an exploration into the historical roots of the jihadist movement. But I kept my mouth shut. They were just doing their job. And, you know, they actually did me a favor. I mean, what if I'd pulled that book out of my pack during the flight? Might have found myself at the bottom of a dog pile. In the end, though, it didn't really matter what book I took on the plane with me that day. The only way I'd ever actually get to read one would be if I became a contortionist. I'm Jeff Hoyt. Welcome to Hoytus Interruptus.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay.
Come on, fly with me. We'll float down in the blue.
Come on, fly. Let's fly, let's fly. Pack up your bags and let's get
come
out of
on,
here.
Let's fly.
Away.
Now, I usually sit on the aisle when I fly. But since I booked late and the flight was packed, all I could get was a window seat toward the rear of the plane. I boarded early, took my seat, and watched my fellow passengers heading down the aisle. Making their way toward me was one of the largest couples I've ever seen on a plane. It was a struggle for them to just get down the aisle. They squeezed and pushed to clear the narrow gap between the seats, slowly heading my way. Since most of the seats were still empty, though, I figured there was no chance that they were actually my seatmates. That is, until they stopped and introduced themselves as my seatmates.
Take a load off, Benny. Take a load free. Take a load off, Benny. And you put the load right on me.
Now, this had only happened to me one other time, about 10 years ago. I sat in the middle seat between two huge college football players. On that flight, though, the guys took good care of me. They offered to sit slightly forward in their seats. That way there was just enough room that I could sit behind their massive shoulders. Sure, it was tight, but, you know, it wasn't really all that uncomfortable. Kind of like sitting behind one of those big padded shoulder harnesses on a roller coaster. Plus, it was a short flight, and we talked football the whole way. That made the time go by much more quickly. This flight, though, was 3.5 hours home to Seattle, and I was sitting next to a woman whose right shoulder extended nearly halfway across my seat. There would be no armrests in use during this flight. Oh, no. When she sat down, my head was instantly pressed against the window like a squashed bug on a windshield. I must say, though, these people could not have been nicer folks. They apologized repeatedly. They knew what they were putting me through and tried to give me as much room as possible, but it was no use. Adding to my discomfort was the guy in the seat directly in front of me, who boarded the plane already 3, if not 4, sheets to the wind. He was in full party mode and letting everyone know it. He wore a t-shirt that said, "Hey Saddam, get ready for your inspection." Above the printed slogan was a macho-looking American eagle snapping a proctologist's glove onto one of its wings. After the plane taxied onto the runway and accelerated for takeoff, he began shouting, "Boogity, boogity, 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 boogity," all the way down the runway and into the air. Now, I had no idea, nor was I even curious as to what boogity meant, but he quickly announced, quite loudly, to those of us in the greater Row 35 metropolitan area, that he was using a NASCAR term that the announcer likes to use when the field takes the green flag. I kicked into prayer mode. Please, God, just get me to cruising altitude so that the seatbelt sign can be turned off and I can spend the rest of the flight dodging drink carts as they head up and down the aisle. As soon as the captain granted my wish, my very large companions, who were clearly grateful for reasons of their own that I was making my escape, pried themselves slowly out of their seats, and for the next 10 blissful minutes, I did deep knee bends and stretches in the bulkhead, trying to restore some semblance of feeling in my shoulders and arms. The flight attendant told me that she'd noticed my situation and that if there was even a single available seat anywhere on the plane, she'd gladly give it to me. But unfortunately, the flight was full. She said that airline policy states that passengers who need an extra seat must purchase one, but since so many buy through the internet or use the self-service check-in, they rarely get to meet their passengers until boarding. This creates the potential for some pretty uncomfortable confrontations at the gate, so agents have been reluctant to press the issue. Then, I heard it. Ding! The captain announced that there was potentially bumpy air much of the rest of the way to Seattle, and that he'd probably leave the seatbelt sign illuminated for most of the rest of the trip. So, I opened the overhead compartment, dug around for my iPod and a pair of earbuds, and wedged my ass into the narrow sliver of seat room allowed me by the laws of physics. I figured if I couldn't move my arms or head enough to read, perhaps I could free up just one finger. Then I could at least operate the flywheel on my iPod, pick something loud, and push the button. 1/2 hour down, and only 3 hours to go. I could do this. So once I was again securely mashed up against the window of the aircraft by my seatmate's right shoulder, the plane lurched through an air pocket, the boogity man in front of me yelled, "Ride, Captain, ride!" at the top of his lungs, and I cranked up the Pink Floyd just about as loud as I could stand it.
Ice is forming on the tips of my wings. Unheeded warnings, I thought of everything. No navigator to find my way home. Unlaid and empty and turned to stone. A sole intention, it's learning to fly.
As I stared out the window at the landscape below, I needed to change my mood. Badly. So I thought about the fact that everyone I know has a story like this. We've all taken that flight from hell. The one you can't really control, you can only hope to endure. One of my favorites was a story my friend Bruce told me. He and his wife Julie moved heaven and earth in preparation for a very special trip. Before they even got to the airport, though, they were already stressed out from all the planning and the packing and the last-minute details. Then, once they arrived at the airport, everything else just came unraveled. Their flight was delayed, and then delayed again, and again. By the time they finally boarded their flight, very, very late that night, the mood on board was not good.
We sit down, and everyone's in a foul mood. All the great laid plans seem to have fizzled away. And as I'm sitting there, I realize that everybody around me is sort of in a funk, except maybe the couple sitting in front of me. They seem to be over-energized. And it is a couple and their very young child. Kid is starting to get words, but most of the words are a little bit mangled. And the thing that would distinguish this couple is that the parents are older than most with a kid this age, but clearly very new at being parents. And that's usually a combination that creates fastidiousness or overprotectedness. Unfortunately, the kid's been up too late now, too, and they are going through a bedtime ritual. And these are the sorts of parents where now everything is special. Everything revolves around this child. And this nighttime ritual, as it slowly evolves, is something that pretty soon has the whole airplane groaning and moaning. And you can hear them up there, and every little step has its importance. You can hear the parents saying, is it time for sleepy sleep for Alexander? Pretty soon they've got this cast of characters and creatures that they brought with them and bags of equipment. Would Alexander like to say goodnight to Mr. Bear? Would Alexander like to say goodnight to Mr. Muffin? Does Alexander feel comfy in his seat? Each time they say one of these things, you can just feel the airplane tightening up on top of all this anxiety they already feel. And blessedly, they finally get to the final lap in their nighttime ritual. And it's pretty clear that Alexander's going to conk out pretty soon. We're all going to be able to relax. Night, night, Mr. Bear. And you can hear the little kid's voice.
Night, night, Mr. Bear.
Night, night, Mr. Muffin.
Night, night, Mr. Muffin.
Night, night to the blankie. Night, night, blankie. And all of a sudden, you hear Alexander sort of catch a second wind here. Each night-night is getting a little bit more oomph to it. Night-night, Mommy! Night-night, Daddy! And all of a sudden, this cute little round head pops up in the chair right in front of me and stares me dead in the eye and yells out, Night-night, bastards! With this big smile on his face. There's this stunned silence in the plane. I burst out laughing. The whole plane roars with laughter. Everyone just bursts into applause as this kid just fills his sails and carries on. Night, night, bastards. Night, night, bastards. Night, night, bastards. Each one sort of building more and more and more. The parents are great. All I could really see were frantic efforts to somehow get Alexander back under control. No way. That kid was on his way.
Sleep finally came for Alexander, and for Bruce and Julie as well. Later, after some time to think about it, they figured out what the kid was really trying to say. It was night-night passengers. Missed it by that much, to the great delight of everyone on board. Bruce told me that Alexander reminded him that all of his unraveling plans were no more controllable than the overexuberance of a 2-year-old. A good thing to remember when mashed up against the window of an airplane while going numb in multiple extremities. So I decided I didn't have to be miserable for the next 3 hours. I needed to remember what I had. I had my music, I had the view, and later, upon landing, I would receive 7,500 additional frequent flyer miles from the airline as a gesture to compensate for my discomfort. So I spent the rest of the flight just looking out the window. I watched the Black Hills of South Dakota and the vast plains of eastern Montana roll past beneath me. I saw the fissures and canyons that were once part of the immense inland ocean and imagined an endless expanse of blue water flowing across that ancient seabed. And after a while, my discomfort was replaced by calm. Sure, I was immobilized, but also hypnotized. That's it for this edition of Hoytus Interruptus. Special thanks to Bruce Morser for his wonderful story, and to my good friends at Soundscapes in Little Rock, Arkansas, for an amazing bit of airport sound design. I'm Jeff Hoyt. Thanks for taking the time.
Yes, the same kind of story seems to come down from long ago. Two friends having coffee together when something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide, at least half of the playing field. Because there's no explaining what your imagination can make you see and feel. Somebody wants nothing. You're hypnotized. Now it's not a meaningless question to ask if they've been and gone. I remember a talk about North Carolina in a strange, strange pond. You see, the sides were like glass in the thick of a forest without a road. And if any man's hand ever made that land, then I think it would have sold. And that's why it seemed like rain. They got me hypnotized. I know that's right. Float around and got you hypnotized.